بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين. It's an honor to be able to start this new course with you brothers and sisters. And this will be a commentary of Surah Yusuf, which is the 12th chapter of the Holy Quran. And although the course has been estimated to take 30 hours, I think it'll take much more than that. But inshallah, in these three sessions, we're going to cover all the verses, inshallah. So even if it means 40 hours or 50 hours, be rest assured that we're going to finish it no matter what, in three parts. But even if a miracle were to happen and we were to finish the whole series in, let's say, 20, which this will not happen, but if this were to happen, then I'll do a commentary of smaller chapters, inshallah, of the Quran, just to fill the gap. But these 30 hours is just an estimate, and you have to be very patient. We're going to do much more, inshallah, and there's no rush, and inshallah it will be of some benefit. So as the synopsis of the course had outlined, we're going to focus mainly on the irfani dimension of the verses. But there'll be some other aspects, non-irfani aspects, we'll cover. It may be covered through the question and the questions that you will be sending. But there's going to be a primary focus on the irfani aspect. And inshallah, with each session, you will understand more and more what I mean by that. There may be sometimes some gaps in between the courses. For example, I may be going for Hajj, or maybe going to certain conferences or centers to talk at. So you have to forgive me if sometimes there's a gap in between, but I'll try to minimize that to the best of my capacity. The lectures will be on audio primarily, but two or three of you had stressed and emphasized for this to be a video recording. This is just to, as a first session, it's a video recording just to see how things go, how the sound quality will be, how the picture quality will be, and then we may continue or we may do it on video and audio alternatively. Okay, now all of you who are aware of the method which I usually teach, is I do go into some detail, maybe sometimes a bit too much. If I'm overdoing it, please let me know. This is the first time I'm doing a tafsir with the aim to go to the very end. Although I have given other tafsir classes, but they were never finished. For example, chapter 19, I remember in Sweden, I had given a commentary of chapter 19, we only did 7 or 8 verses. Or in Pakistan, chapter Rum, Surah Rum, chapter 30, I think it is. It was 1 month of Ramadan, we went through, I think, maybe 10 or 20 verses. But here, inshallah, we're going to start from the beginning and we're going to end. And those of you who have seen my teachings before, you're aware of the manner and the detail which I try to go to, but if I'm overdoing it, please let me know. So the first verse is Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, and inshallah this session we're going to talk about Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, which I'm sure you all know what it means better than me, but I'll be approaching it from a particular angle. And then I'll be linking it with one of the verses in Surah Yusuf, excuse me, I'll be linking the two. So I'll be linking what the essence of Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim with one verse of Surah Yusuf. Yeah, one particular verse. It's chapter 12, but it's verse 26. And inshallah, this connection, how they're related, inshallah, will be of interest and of use and of practical irfani relevance for me and you. So after I give you this code in chapter 12, verse 26, you can start evaluating yourself in a very, you know, proper manner. Okay, so let's go through Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim through a particular angle of Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And if I don't cover many of your queries you have in relation to Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, you can always ask for next week, inshallah. Okay, so Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, or the Bismillah, or the Basmala formula, it's called. So when they say Basmala, it's referring to the formula of Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This has been revealed 114 times in the Holy Quran, and these 114 times, it's not as if it was revealed once and then for the 113 times it was just inserted and placed there. No, it was revealed as God's word 114 times. And these 114 times, 113 of them, it's the start of the surah. It's the start of 113 surahs. And the other, the 114th Basmala formula, is in the middle of one of the other chapters of the Holy Quran, Surah An-Naml, I think chapter 27, if I'm not mistaken. Now, the question is it the Bismillah, which is the beginning of the surah, is it part of the actual surah or not? Or was it just placed there? No, it is part of the surah. It was revealed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And therefore, and this practice has been executed by the Urafa, the likes of Ayatollah Hassanzada Amuni. When we read, for example, in chapter in chapter 12, Surah Yusuf, when the first verse is Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, they've enumerated this verse with one, with the number one, because it's part of the surah. It was revealed by Allah. It's the first verse of this chapter. And so Alif Lam Ra, which inshallah that also we're going to go into detail. Mullah Sadra has a very specific interpretation here in relation to the disassociated letters, which many of you may not have come across. It's linked with the occult sciences and the Abjad alphabet, the Abjad notary system. But this Alif Lam Ra would then be the start of the second verse. So Ayatollah Hassanzade Amuni, when you read his books and he gives Quranic references, if you're not aware of this fact, you'll never find the verse he's referring to, or you think he's always one verse out. So the Bismillah of each surah, since the Bismillah is part of the surah and it's revealed by Allah, it's enumerated by the number one, for example, if it's the first verse. So in chapter 2, for example, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alif Lam Mim. Alif Lam Mim would be the second verse. Dhalika al-kitab wa la rayba fi would be the third verse, for example. So the logic that the Urafa, or some of them at least, use when they use this system of enumerating the verse of the Holy Quran is this: that Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim was revealed by Allah. It was revealed 114 times. Not that it was just revealed once in Surah Al-Hamd, the first chapter of the Holy Quran, and then it was just added or placed there 113 times. No, that's not the case. Now, there's one chapter in the Holy Quran, the ninth chapter, the chapter of Tawbah, repentance, where it doesn't start off with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And the scholars of the letter, Ahlul Zahir, they say because the content is about attacking and distancing oneself from the mushrikeen. It starts with the word bara'a, and you're shunning the mushrikeen, and so on and so forth. And you don't attack or disassociate yourself from them through the mercy of Allah. It's not on a par with Allah's mercy. Well, definitely that interpretation falls short when you want to look at the Irfani principles. What do you mean? Even hell is a manifestation of Allah's mercy. So that is not acceptable. And therefore, many of the Urafa believe that chapter 9 in reality is a part of chapter 8. So there is no chapter 9. And this chapter 8 and 9, as we know it, it's one chapter, and it's called Anfal, for example. That's the name of chapter 8. There's no separate, chapter here. And that's why it's not starting, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So that is an important point. But even if we were to accept that chapter 9 is a chapter in and of itself, even though there's no Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim for whatever reason in this chapter, but the chapter begins with Ba. And Ba has a dot under it. And in traditions, we read that Amirul Mu'mineen, the manifestation of all of Allah's attributes in their completion, he is the dot under the Ba. And although it's not specific to Amirul Mu'mineen, it's all the 14 Ma'sumeen, they have this. Because they are Asma'ullah. And so even if there's no Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, the Ba itself is denoting that this verse, this chapter, is through Asma'ullah. Now that I will explain as we progress here. Another point is that each Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim is different. It's not as if the Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, although the translation is all the same, and the words are all the same, but the content and inner meaning of Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim for each chapter is different. Okay? And the Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim of each chapter manifests differently. And the manner to which Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim manifests can only be evaluated through the content of that chapter. And since all the chapters are different in meaning, the Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim is different also. That's an important point to bear in mind. And here, the Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim of each chapter is in association with, is in unity with, that chapter's content. Now, here, there's something to be added, but since I'm going in a particular order, I'll come to that in a minute, that we have to understand this Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. What is the opening preposition, the ba of Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim? It doesn't say, for example, Ismullah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. B Bismillah, with the name of Allah, the Rahman, the Rahim. Okay, so this with the ba preposition, we have to understand what that is before we understand the relationship between the Bismillah and the chapter. The chapter which is headed by, which is out, which starts with that Bismillah. Okay, but one or two just small fiqhi points, and then we'll continue. Why are we even paying attention to this point that the Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim was revealed by Allah 114 times, and the Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim is part of that chapter? So the Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim of Surah Yusuf is part of that Surah Yusuf. It wasn't just added there. Because this has fiqhi relevance too. You know, in Salatul Ayat, when there's an earthquake and you do the Salat, or in eclipses, when you do a Salat, a two-unit prayer in a particular manner, it's called Salatul Ayat, the prayer for signs, referring to particular natural signs such as eclipses, earthquakes and other things. And in that Salat, when you want to recite the second chapter, after reciting Surah Al-Fatiha, when you want to recite the second chapter, like Qul Huwallahu Ahad, you have to separate it into five parts. And after reciting each part, you have to go into ruku, come back, recite the second of the five separated parts, and then go to ruku and come back, and so on and so forth. I'm sure many of you have undergone this salat. And if you haven't, you would have to do its compensatory equivalent if you missed out on it. Here, if Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim is part of the surah of, for example, Qul Huwallahu Ahad, here you have to divide now this chapter 112 into five parts. You can say Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, one part. Qul Huwallahu Ahad, second part. Allahu Samad, third part. Lam yalid wa lam yulad, fourth. Wa lam yakun lahu kufuwan ahad. Look, with Bismillah, since it's part of the chapter, when you're dividing it, you can use Bismillah as one part. So you say Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, then you go into the ruku. But if you were of the opinion that Bismillah is not part of the chapter of, you know, let's say chapter 112, and it will just place there. Here, when you divide the chapter into five parts, when you say Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, since you believe it's not part of the chapter, you can't go into ruku. You would have to say this, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Qul Huwallahu Ahad, one part. Then you go into ruku, come back up. Allahu Samad, two parts. Lam Yalid, here in this one verse you can divide it into two. It doesn't matter how you divide the chapter into five. Any five parts would do. Lam yalid, wa lam yulad, wa lam yakun lahu kufuwan ahad. Okay? So it has fiqhi relevance here. Now, but the spiritual relevance here. Let's go back to this ba, the preposition ba, which is called the preposition of the bar of the fabric bar, the fabric bar. What does that mean? In the Quran we have verses that Allah has created the heavens and the earth. Bil haq. Bil is also the bar preposition. It means the very fabric of the heavens and the earth, the very fabric of it is haq. It's all haq. It's all reality. And it's referring to existence. Here, this each chapter of the Quran that you're reciting, it's all Asma'ullah. Because we're saying Bismillah. So, every chapter of the Holy Quran, it's all the fabric of every chapter of the Holy Quran, all its verses, the very fabric of it, it's all Asma'ullah. But these Asma'ullah, they manifest differently in each chapter. But the very fabric of each chapter, it's all Asma'ullah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You see? And here, who are Asma'ullah? We have traditions that the Ahlul Bayt are Asma'ullah. And I am the dot under the bar. That dot exists. Even if we were to say chapter 9 is a chapter on its own and it has no Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, but the dot under the bar exists, i.e. Asma'ullah. And Ali, for example, or any of the ultimate Ma'sumeen, they are manifesting themselves in each chapter of the Holy Quran to different terms. Okay. Now, here Allama Tabatabai mentions that it's the correct and proper decorum and etiquette that we start with any given action, we start with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. And he brings this hadith that all Muslim denominations have this. Kullu amrin dhibal lam yubda bi bismillah fahuwa abtal. That every significant matter, any affair, thing that one does, any action that isn't started off bi bismillah. Look, pay attention here. Already we're entering a very important point here. Every action which isn't bi bismillah, okay, i.e. it's not, the fabric of that action isn't filled with Asma'ullah, fahuwa abtal, that action is incomplete, it's futile, it's abtal, it's futile, incomplete. Now, those of you who are astute here may have got the point, but this point has to be opened up. So, here we can extrapolate from this indisputable hadith from narrated by all denominations that to avoid futile actions, to avoid void actions, and because that abtal, we don't want that, do we? And to acquire completion, abtal means incomplete, it means void. So you want to complete it. You want to avoid, avoid. So, to avoid any futile actions and to acquire completion in relation to a given action, it has to start with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. For example, when you eat, you say Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When you drink, when you work, when you marry, when you recite a chapter of the Holy Quran, it has to be through Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Right now, so far, we have some idea what this means. When I eat, the eating has to be filled with Asma'ullah. When all actions are filled with Asma'ullah, but am I aware of it? In spiritual wayfaring, in Irfan, Irfan is that being aware, recognizing it. Even if you don't recognize it, all actions are filled with Asma'ullah. But in Irfan, we want to be aware of it and therefore grow. We want to taste it and grow. Otherwise, if we're not tasting it or not aware of it, how will that benefit us? So the working, the drinking, the eating, the studying, the marrying, it has to all be filled with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It has to be filled with Asma'ullah. Now, a question arises. Is this Bismillah merely a verbal effort, or is it an inner state to be acquired, a state of your soul that has to be acquired before X action is to be done and it will lead to the completion of that action. And there'll be no deficiency, no waste, no void, no incompletion. Because you have that inner state of the soul. Is Bismillah a verbal effort? Well, if you say yes, that's like abracadabra. Is it a state of the soul that you have to acquire? Yes, it seems to be more on a par with the state of your soul. Okay, so by completion, when we say we want to complete our actions, or when we say we want to attain to our destination, because if your action is abtar, because you didn't start with Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, you won't reach your destination. If you want your action to be complete, if you want to attain to your destination, if you want to reach salvation, all these terms, okay, which are the opposite of abtar, what we mean is that the index is, and the criterion for salvation, reaching one's destination and completion of action, the index and the criterion is the soul, not the mouth just saying something verbally. The soul has to undergo something for Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim to be realized and for us to benefit from it and for our actions to be complete. So the index isn't economic, it's not a worldly index, it's not a materialistic index. The index is the soul. What's happening to your soul? Now, in chapter 17, verse 7, it's very explicitly mentioned in Ahsantum la'anfusikum. If you did good, you've only done good for your own soul. You haven't done good to others' souls. That has other parameters attached to it. And if you do bad, you've only done bad to your own soul. You haven't necessarily done bad to anyone else. Depends how they react to your action. But that which is a definite is that when it comes to you yourself, your good actions only benefit you and your bad actions only harm you. No one else's actions can harm you. They can harm you economically. They can harm you materialistically, yes. They may harm you in other ways. But the soul can't be harmed by someone else. Only you can harm your soul. And the hereafter is a function of your soul, which actions you've done. So no one is responsible for your hereafter. If someone does something bad to you, it doesn't mean they've harmed you. The way you've reacted to that bad action, you've harmed yourself. And therefore your hereafter, you're responsible, not them. And that's why in chapter 6, verse 164, وَلَا تَزَرُ وَازِرَةٌ وِزْرَ أُخْرَى. No one will bear the burden of another in the hereafter. It's all to do with your own actions. No one can do something that you bear their burden. It's only you and your actions. Okay, now, here, so everything real here pertains to the dimension of the soul. And if you have a worldly minus soul worldview, or an economic minus soul worldview, it's not real, in quotes. It's not a real thing. Reality is what is happening in the hereafter, moment to moment as you are acting. That is the reality you're going to face. And any worldview you have, which is minus the soul, is going to be of disservice to you in your journey to Allah and your hereafter. Okay. Now, even heaven and hell, it's a function of your soul. There's one tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. I won't go through the Arabic, although I have the Arabic here. Here, the question arises, someone asks,
that why are some people, why will they be in heaven forever? Or why will some people be in hell forever? The Imam replies, because were, for those who are in heaven, were they to remain in the world forever in the world, they wouldn't disobey Allah. And those who are in hell, the Imam says, were they to remain in this world and not die, if they would remain, they would go against Allah and rebel against Allah. This is a very interesting hadith, misinterpreted by many. Many people say this hadith may not be correct or may have another meaning, because how can Allah punish you in hell forever for something you haven't done? Then you say, well, what do you mean you haven't done? Is it because the hadith says, were they to have lived on earth forever, they would have rebelled against Allah, and because of that, they are in hell forever. But the thing is, they were only in this world for 80, 90, 100 years. And then you're saying, were they to have been, when you're punishing them before the action is actually actualized? Is that fair? But look, they've missed the point here. Heaven and hell is a function of the state of your soul. You can reach a level of your soul which is so high, but it's a real level. It's a real station of the soul. Its spirituality is so high that if with that spirituality of the soul one was to live forever on earth, they would never sin. But now that high spirituality, because the person is dead now after 80, 90, 100 years, is manifested in the hereafter as eternal heaven. But something real is manifested as eternal heaven. Or someone's soul can be so depressed that even if they were living on earth forever, eternally, they would keep sinning. This means that there's a real depression of the soul, such a lowly station of the soul, which is manifested as eternal hell. And there are most of us like me and you who are in between. So look, it's all the station of your soul here. And when we want to do reach completion of a particular action, we want to reach salvation, reach our destination, we have to be looking at a station of the soul here. So Bismillah isn't just a verbal effort, is linked to an inner state of the soul. What state? What is this state? We'll come to that in a minute. Just to end with that hadith, then the Imam recited this verse of the Holy Quran, قُلْ كُلُّنْ يَعْمَلُ عَلَى شَاكِلَتِهِ. Everyone, every person acts on a par with their inner constitution, their soul. What level is it at? And then the Imam gives an interpretation of that verse of the Holy Quran and says, قَالَ, he said, عَلَى نِيَّتِهِ. So everyone acts on a par with their inner constitution, he says, everyone acts on a par with their intentions. Intentions is a function of your soul. Intentions is a function of your soul. Okay. So, this inner state through which Bismillahirrahmanirrahim is actualized needs serious tuning of intentions, and these actions that you do, they have to be filtered, intended, modulated the Bismillah way. Now, what is this Bismillah way? So Bismillah isn't just a verbal effort, it's a state of the soul. What is it? How do we acquire that state of the soul? Let's see what time. Although we're coming to the half an hour point, and I know most of you in the recent survey preferred the 30 minute lecture time, and then the second group was 40 minutes. Then there was a smaller number who said 50 minutes, and there was a very small number who said 1 hour. But anyway, but sometimes, I mean, I will try to focus on 30 minutes, but sometimes I would have to go a bit more. So at least we reach somewhere, you know, specific, clear. Ayatollah Jawadi Amri says, look, for a real Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, two prerequisites are necessary here. Two prerequisites. The first is that action that you do, it has to be a good action per se. It can't be something haram. That would be a contradiction in terms. Doing something haram with Bismillah. So the action has to be good in and of itself. Now when we say good, it means it has to be good. For example, killing. Is that good in and of itself or not? Well, we don't know. It depends. If it's killing innocent life, it's wrong. If it's killing to save innocent life, or to save oneself out of defense, or oppressors are attacking your country and there's no other way, it becomes something very good. It becomes a good action. So when I say the action has to be good in and of itself, I mean it has to be good in the line of you becoming more and more perfect. Okay? It has to be in the line of your perfection, in virtue. And that actions, they vary. Killing somewhere is bad, somewhere is good. Or writing may be good here, writing may be something bad, depending on the context, and so on and so forth. Anger may be bad in one context, but anger somewhere else may be in line with your perfection. So the first prerequisite is, this action that you're doing, is it in line with your perfection? If it is, it has to be. This is the first prerequisite. So if you do something which is not in line with you becoming more and more perfect in virtue, then that would be a contradiction in terms. You can't do that. Bismillah. The second is that the doer's intentions have to be good too. The intentions of the doer. The doer's heart or mind or soul. Now what do I mean by that? For example, when someone wants to do a particular action, they say, why am I doing it? Okay? For whom? How do I see the action? Who am I attributing the action to? What's the incentive behind doing the action? What's the worldview that backs this action of mine? This is very important. This is where monotheists differ from humanitarians. Because humanitarians may not believe in God, and they do actions which are on the surface good, but it's not backed by a Tawhidi worldview, therefore they're not getting closer to Allah. They attribute the actions to themselves, not to Allah. They see themselves as a doer of the action, not Allah. They see it as their money and they're giving charity. They don't see it as, it's not my money, all wealth is Allah's. They respect someone, they say, I am respecting this person, it's a good deed. They don't say, Allah, all honor is Allah's, only Allah can grant honor. I'm not saying Islam is anti-humanitarianism, no. But humanitarianism is a very, very small dimension, a very, very small share of Islam. Islam is much greater. Recently I saw an advertisement saying, Islam, the religion of humanity. Forgive me, and I know these are private sessions we're having, and please keep these videos or audios to yourself. But this is wrong. You've stripped off Tawheed by this statement. A religion of humanity? Humanity is something very, very minuscule. Islam is Tawheed. And all actions ought to enhance Tawheed. And it's only Tawheed which is manifesting. But in the level of actions, every action you're doing, the monotheistic way wants to enhance your Tawheed. This is not seen or part of the humanitarian way. So don't confine Islam to such, you know, titles. Humanitarianism is something very, very little, very small. Tawheed has to be enhanced, and a Tawheedi worldview has to be incorporated within you.
Okay.
So, the doer of the action, the first prerequisite was the action has to be in line with your perfection. The second prerequisite was the doer's intentions. Why are they doing it? For who? Who are they attributing the action to? All these are important actions. Through which worldview are they committing? Are they committed to this action? Are they committing it with sincerity? Are they doing it for Allah's sake? Do they have a Tawhidi worldview? That I'm doing this for Allah's sake alone, not for anyone else. Humanitarianism doesn't have this. It does not have this. But this ikhlas, this sincerity, is very important in relation to this second prerequisite. Because the second prerequisite is the doer's soul here, the heart of the doer. What are the intentions? It has to be through ikhlas. It has to be through making their actions sincere. And then the ultimate goal is making themselves sincere. Not only becoming mukhlis, but even becoming mukhlas, where the eye has been slaughtered. So, here, with every action that you do, if you want to do it the Bismillah way, and for Allah's names to be tasted and seen by you, action to action, one is the action has to be a good action. The second is you have to do it with sincerity, with ikhlas. And naturally, that Tawhidi worldview has to be there. Because without the Tawhidi worldview, acquiring sincerity is not possible. The sincerity will be a pseudo-sincerity. It won't be real. It has to be based on Tawhid. All honor is Allah's, all wealth is Allah's, all respect is Allah's, all goodness is Allah's, all generosity is Allah's, all forgiveness is Allah's, and so on and so forth. So, in ikhlas, when you want to make your actions sincere for Allah's sake, you say, I commit X action for Allah's sake. But look, it's very important, and you have to do it with action to action. But it takes, you know, many years, but you have to grow slowly and surely. Start with one action and try to do it for Allah's sake alone. And then you can evaluate yourself in retrospect if it truly was or not. But here, with this statement, which you're becoming a mukhlis and you're making your actions sincere for Allah, that you still see an ego, you say, I commit X action, the I is still there. And then you attribute the actions to yourself, I commit X action. Then you say, for Allah's sake, but that Allah is still a rational Allah. You're not seeing the real thing. These are all barriers. Barriers in sincerity. Now look. وَمَا هَذِهِ الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَهْوٌ وَلَعِبٌ. The reality of the worldly life is nothing but two things, diversion and a gain. By gain, what we mean in Arabic is a sequence of events which are traced back to one's imaginative faculty. Do you know when children play games and they say, this is mummy, this is daddy, and that is a pilot, and so on and so forth, then they're called for lunch and they throw everything away. They were just imagining these things. This is called the game. The worldly life is diversion and the game. The game aspect is, in this world, how you attribute things to yourself. My wife, my husband, my children, my work, my certificate, my job, I did this, I did that. This is all world, the world, the dunya. But it's a state of the soul. The dunya is a state of the soul. The dunya isn't something physical. That's samawat wal ard, the heavens and earth. But this dunya, it's a state of the soul, where with your imaginative faculty, you see all these things as yourself. A tawhidi worldview is lacking here. Also, the dunya is lahwan, a diversion. And then, for example, we believe in Allah, that's rational Allah, we've proved, and that's okay, it's good, it's necessary. But even that is a concoction of the mind. It's a diversion from the real thing. So even if your ikhlas is mastered 97%, there are still three things, you're still drowned in this concealed shirk. And that is, you see an eye, and you attribute the action to the eye, and that Allah is only a diversion. It's not the real thing, it's a rational Allah. These three have to be also taken away. And it's very difficult. You can't take away the eye, eliminate the eye. You can just maximize your ikhlas, and then Allah will take away and slaughter your eye. And then your actions are Allah's actions. Your words are Allah's words. Okay? And that's a very high state of spirituality. So, here, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in every given action, if you want to fill it with Asma'ullah, what do you have to do? It's an inner state you have to acquire. What is that inner state? You have to free yourself from the worldly life. How? Through sincerity. By doing what? Eliminating all forms of lahu, diversion, and all forms of la'ib, games, as we've explained. And only then, when you do that particular action through this form of sincerity, you're doing it bismillah. But you may be, the bismillah may be 10%, 20%, maybe 97%, it may be 100%. It depends how much of the worldly life has attracted you. Now, in chapter Yusuf, verse 26, there's a story, and I'll just mention it, but I'll touch upon it in the next session, where Yusuf alayhi salam is escaping from Zalikha, or Zulaykha, but Zalikha is more accurate in Arabic, and Zalikha is going after Yusuf, and Yusuf escapes because she's trying to entice him, and he wants to escape the scene because it's falling, it's an evil scene. He escapes, and as he's about to open the door to leave, the shirt is torn. The garment of Yusuf is torn. And then when they open the door, the prince of Egypt was there, says, "What's happening here?" And then Zalikha says, "What are you going to do, someone who has ill intentions to your family member? Are you going to take them into prison, or are you going to punish them?" And so on and so forth. And then a member of the family of Zalikha says that if the garment was torn from the front, if I can just bring the actual Arabic, I have noted it down here. Yes, the verse reads, وَشَهِدَ شَاهِدٌ مِنْ أَهْلِهَا, that a member of the family of Zalikha, then a witness, then gave testimony that in kana qamisu, if the garment of Yusuf qudda min qubul, if it was torn from the front of the garment was torn, fasadagat, Zalikha is saying the truth, wa min al kadhimin, and he, Yusuf, would be one of the liars. وَإِنْ كَانَ قَمِيسُهُ قُدَّ مِنْ دُبُورِ, but if the garment is torn from the back, فَكَذَبَتْ, Zalikha is lying, and Yusuf would be one of the truthful ones. This has a very important esoteric meaning. And this Bismillah that we've explained is an inner state of the soul, where the dunya has to be eliminated, so that you do the particular action, the Bismillah way, is linked to the esoteric meaning of this verse, and I just have to
give one introductory point and then give you the esoteric meaning of this verse, inshallah, in the next session. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala al-tahiri. If there's any feedback you have in relation to the quality of this video recording, please let me know. But my hands are very tied back here in Iran. I'm very limited in what I can do, technologically speaking. So you have to forgive me for any deficiencies. Okay. Wassalam.